It's time for the VolQuest podcast, where we dissect the biggest news items of the week.
Hey, good Tuesday morning, everybody. Welcome to the VolQuest podcast. I'm Eric Kane, alongside Austin Price, Brent Hubbs, and Grant Ramey, presented as always by our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions. That phone number is 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. East Tennessee's number one choice for roofing, siding, windows, or garage since 1999. That is Exterior Home Solutions. Going to discuss a couple different items on the agenda today. Tennessee basketball, 2-0 week. Really nice offensive effort at Oklahoma on Saturday. What's the latest in filling the assistant coaching role on the football staff? And it is opening week for Tennessee baseball later this week against Hofstra. All that and more coming up here on today's VolQuest podcast. We'll start with hoops. And Grant Ramey, that was a very satisfying win. Another win. Again, you had a win over a good Missouri team earlier in the week. And, you know, you travel to Oklahoma. Never easy to go on the road in this league. But Tennessee just fired out of the gates offensively. One of the most efficient days Tennessee's had all year long. And that was the story. Tennessee shot 70% from the field in the first half, 50 in the second half, 60 overall in the game. Tennessee was efficient from three. Really, really good ball club there on Saturday offensively and defensively, as always, for Rick Barnes.
Yeah, a huge start to a tough stretch on the schedule where you're playing four out of five away from home. And you're starting that stretch having played some inconsistent basketball going into it. Just look at the first half against Missouri compared to the second half. So for them to get off to that start, that was an insane first half. The number of shots that went in, it was just like every trip down, somebody else was making a shot and scoring in a different way. And to do that on the road, obviously, it's huge. Oklahoma's hard to figure out. They started out 13-0. They beat Vanderbilt by 30 a week before. They scored 61 in the second half of that game. So they are really good offensively. I think they were ranked number 15th going into that thing. So Tennessee has a habit of holding teams to their lowest point total. They did it against Auburn. They did it against Florida in the second meeting in that game. They did it against Oklahoma on Saturday. So it wasn't just all the shots that went in the first half, and they played good offensively in the second half as well. It's that defensive standard that they play. It doesn't let up. They're the number one ranked defense in KenPom for a reason, and it's the lowest points per 100 possessions since 2023 Texas Tech, I think. Like, that's the level they're playing at. And when shots go in, Rick has said it looks easy. Everything looks great when shots go in. But, man, when shots go in and you're playing that brand of defense, you're a really good basketball team.
Grant, when you look at it beyond shooting 70%, I mean, you're going to win games when you shoot 70%. That's, I mean, you got to work really hard to figure out a way to lose right. One like that. What do you think is? I mean, do you think they found something a little better offensively, where it's not just reliant on the shots going in? I know it looked pretty on Saturday when the shots fall, but do you think that they've gotten into a little better continuity on offense? Have they found some different things offensively here the last week or so? Is it just simply making shots?
Well, the last two games has been Zakai making shots because he hasn't really shot it that well. Like, he's been super productive. He's having a career year in terms of just points, assists, rebounds, all that stuff. But the shooting percentage has not been there, especially from the three-point line. And then he comes back from missing that Florida game, and he goes 4-for-4 from three against Missouri. And I think 2-for-3 at Oklahoma the other night. And so he's making shots. And Igor, too. Igor Milicic is scoring it in different ways. Like, he's hitting three-point shots. He hasn't really done that consistently. He's been kind of hit or miss there basically all year. But he's driving to the rim. He's scoring in mid-range. He's hitting threes. He's you know, rebounds, assists, steals, blocks. Like, he's doing a little bit of everything. It feels like he's slowing down and producing more and playing well. And I think Rick has described him kind of as maybe a release valve, pressure release valve for some of these other guys, where when he's producing, the pressure's not on these other guys to produce. And then when you look at Zakai, if he's going to score it the way he scores it, you know the assists are going to be there. You know he's going to rebound despite being a 5'9 point guard. Like, when those guys are doing that and playing at that level, I think that's what this team can look like. And when they're not producing, that's when the struggle comes. But you know that defense is going to be there. It's just a matter of who's going to produce offensively night in and night out, and what's it going to look like.
Offensively, they were a train wreck against Kentucky here at home just, you know, a week or two ago. Now they go on the road later tonight, you know, to Lexington, a game that, you know, to me is still super gettable for Tennessee, especially if they shoot it the way they shot it the last three halves. You know, Kentucky gives up a ton of points. Do you think Kentucky set up to see a different Tennessee team than they saw just a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, I think Tennessee's a little bit embarrassed by the way they played against Kentucky at home, given the magnitude of that game, that rivalry, and wanting to play better at home, just the number of shots that Kentucky made and the way that game played out. And Kentucky, honestly, it's kind of insult to injury, but that was a 5-game stretch where they went 1-4. That was the only win they had in that stretch, and they've lost a couple at home at least. Alabama scored, you know, a ton up there. Florida scored 100 there in a loss. Who went up there? Arkansas, obviously, when Calipari went up there in that reunion a couple weeks ago and all the huge deal that was. So they are susceptible at home, and they are kind of struggling. They bounced back a little bit against South Carolina on Saturday. South Carolina's 0-11, I think, in the league, 0-10, something like that. So they're not a good basketball team. But Kentucky took care of business. But if you're Tennessee, the way you shot it at Oklahoma, the way you played really 40 minutes of basketball start to finish on both ends of the floor has to give you confidence. And Rick has won at Rupp. I mean, they haven't had any trouble going up there and winning basketball games. Obviously, it's a very different-looking Kentucky basketball program with Mark Pope instead of John Calipari, and the roster is completely different and all that stuff. But if you can go up there and if you can just slow them down a little bit compared to what they did in Knoxville, just the number of tough shots that they made here, you're going to give yourself a chance because you assume that you're going to continue to at least score it a little bit. Like it's not going to look like Oklahoma every single night, but some version of that, and you could have a pretty good chance.
Grant, do you wonder about this team's discipline up there offensively? And because Kentucky, when they were in Knoxville, just allowed Tennessee to shoot a bunch of threes. They kind of backed off and sort of packed it in and said, you know, Tennessee didn't get off to a good start, so it made it easier. But Tennessee ended up shooting 40-some-odd threes in that game. Mm-hmm. They have not shot anywhere near that the last couple of games since that loss. Do you worry about their discipline on the road against a team that's going to probably invite them to shoot the three ball early if it doesn't go?
I would worry about it more if the Missouri game didn't happen. And Rick, at halftime of that Missouri game, he took the first 4 minutes of that game, the film of that Missouri game, at halftime and kind of broke it down, had this mini film session at halftime and said, all this stuff that we've been talking about that we're wanting to get is there if we just get it. They hadn't got it. They hadn't executed the game plan doing the stuff that they wanted to do. And then they come out in that second half and they have that stretch where they score 30 points in 7 minutes and they rally from down 11 and all that stuff and what they've been doing offensively since then. So if they didn't have that already kind of fresh in their minds, like you better go up there and you better follow a scouting report and you better not deviate and you better, whatever's there, you better take advantage of it. And I think you have to, and also you have to, that's still fresh in your mind what happened against Kentucky when they came here. I mean, the number of threes they shot, the number of threes they missed. I mean, the same team that went 11 for 45 against Kentucky went 10 for their first 13 against Missouri a week later. The same team that went 11 for 45 went to Oklahoma and started 5 for 5 in the first half from the three-point line. So they can make shots, and they should take them if they're there. But, you know, if you're missing 9, 10 in a row like you did at home, you better find a different way to do it, and you better – follow a game plan if that's not the game plan that's in place.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, obviously the Kentucky game was just you know, a couple weeks ago. It's not like it was a long time ago, but kind of on your note, how is this Tennessee team different? What lessons has Tennessee learned in the short time since that obviously they can carry to Lexington here tonight?
I think they've got some confidence back. I think Chaz is shooting it better, shooting it more confident. I mean, Chaz pulling up in for a transition three against Florida, like, that's the ultimate confidence shot. Like, you're not taking that unless you're feeling good about your shot and you think it's going in. And he took that shot and he made it. And he's been a little bit of a different basketball player since then. I mean, he's been more effective. He scored in different ways at Oklahoma. It wasn't just hitting the three. So I think more than anything, it's the confidence that the shots are falling again, that they're not going to go 11 for 45 every single night. They're not going to struggle to get to 60 points. They're going to play really, really good defense. Now they've seen some shots go in. They know what they can do offensively. It's just a matter of, you know, does Igor keep playing at this clip? Does Zakai keep hitting shots at this clip? Does Chaz keep shooting it with confidence? They need to go up there, and it's a similar recipe on the road all the time. Hit some shots early in the game, play your brand of defense, and just kind of settle in and go from there. Because if you can go on the road and if you can hit shots early, you can suck the wind out of the place, and it's going to be a quiet 40 minutes, kind of like it was at Oklahoma the other day, because you just went up there and you started making shots and you took over the game. They're going to have to see some shots go in early at Rupp because it's going to be a tough atmosphere to play in, as it always is. But if they can settle in and kind of get that confidence going, they should have a shot.
And Grant, is there anybody in the country that likes an iPad on the bench more than Rick Barnes does?
No, he's always turning around, checking something, looking at something, asking some of his guys what's going on. So, yeah, it's we talked about iPads and football all summer, it felt like, and into the fall. And here it is, Rick Barnes is maybe the biggest fan of it.
Well, and to be and break down 4 minutes of film, and that's what your halftime adjustments is. Instead of getting on the board and drawing, you just pull up the screen and you go, you know, 8 minutes of your 15-minute halftime with a complete breakdown of, you know, just your bad stuff in the first half of a basketball game, is right up his alley. I mean, it was funny because he was on Volcals and I asked him about the iPad and he was like, I like it in game. I like it at the half. One of the things I like about it in game is it helps me argue with officials better. Because what
you
I
can think, prove it.
What I think I see, I can turn and go, did I see what I thought? And he was like, yeah. And so then I can tell the official, hey, I've got it back here. You were wrong on that one. Or,
and I'm sure the officials just love
yeah,
that
the officials
change.
Love the iPad oh, technology yeah, being introduced.
He said he had a story. He said, I just yelled at a guy because it was like, you completely missed that call. And then I turned during a timeout and said, he missed that, right? And the guy was like, nah, coach, that was right. And he was like, oh, I got to apologize to him. So
okay, so maybe the officials don't hate it.
But it's pretty wild just how, because you're right, in football we all talk about it. Like it was like a 5-month story in football about how iPads and devices were going to change the entire game. But it's really become a thing in basketball. I mean, it's really created a lot of, okay, we can get this out of bounds play here. You know, they're doing this. We can tweak this kind of stuff. It's really an aid, as much of an aid in basketball as it is in football, which I never dreamed it being the case.
And Rick Barnes loves a film session. Oh, I mean, he loves nobody an loves. Extended film session. Like we talk to Rick and we talk to players, and then we wait for the film session to end so they can start practice when we watch practice. And sometimes it is 2.5-3 hours, like taking intermission in the middle of the film session so you can get up and stretch your legs and get some popcorn or something to stay awake because it's a marathon.
They keep shooting it the way they've shot the last three halves. You'll have the iPad playing Retro Bowl over there. There'll be no point for film sessions. What font size we think he's using over there?
Oh, he's got the billboard size font that my mom uses on her phone that you can read from three states away.
Grant, how big has Felix and Cade become in terms of what they're not just scoring, but what they're helping the offense create? I mean, because clearly they're playing through the paint the last three halves more than they did in the Kentucky game, obviously, the last three games, I should say. What do you think is the emergence and how significant is their involvement in the offense beyond offensive rebound putbacks?
Well, I think you could argue Felix might be the best defensive player on this team, and he's on a team with Jemai Meshek and Zakai Ziegler. I think that speaks volumes, like what he's doing at the rim, blocking shots, and Cade, too, defensively. The timing he has on block shots is really, really impressive. Offensively, it does feel like they're a different team when they get X number of paint touches, when they try to play inside out, when they try to involve those guys. And sometimes it's catching lobs, sometimes it's throwing it down to Felix, and he's got that little hook or whatever it is, left-handed kind of shot put a little bit that he had against Florida a couple times. Like, those are huge buckets. Those are huge moments. And it feels like anytime Cade checks in, he gets all three offensive rebounds in the first couple possessions, and he kind of starts sparking some stuff, and he's catching lobs and doing all this stuff, and he's a good rim protector in his own right. So those two guys are huge. They're never going to be huge in the box score, a lot of crooked numbers and you know, turn your heads and do all this stuff, but they are going to impact a basketball game by protecting the rim, by catching lobs, by, you know, sealing and letting guys get to the rim. Just by getting those paint touches and getting the offense in the flow, going inside out the way Rick wants it. So those guys, they're not going to get the attention, but they play really, really big roles.
Last question from me about basketball. We had this discussion on the board, a couple of people posting a lot of analytic stuff on who the best five and all those type of things are. Do you think you're going to see a little more of what we saw in the Missouri game in the second half with that lineup, which is a little less Meshack than maybe we've seen earlier in the year? Or do you think that's just going to be hinging on what they need offensively and where they are offensively?
I think you have to, because you got to get your best five on the floor. You got to get your best on both ends of the floor. And you look at the numbers say that the offense is way better with Jordan Gainey on the floor because he's much more of an offensive threat, and they have to respect different guys and space the floor differently defensively, opposing teams do. And you look at the defensive numbers, they basically don't fall off. They're very, very similar in terms of what the defense has given up with Jemai Meshack on the floor versus what they're giving up with Gainey on the floor. Like, you have to kind of go down that path now because you got to get ready for March. You better find the most consistent way that you can score the basketball, because that 9-11 point hole you dug against Missouri, you can't do that in March. Like, you can't do that in an NCAA tournament game because you start, you know, calculating how much time you got left, and it starts getting pretty nervy pretty early in those kind of games. Like, you better find the five that scores it the best that are going to be able to win you basketball games. Like, defense can win you basketball games in March, but you better have guys on the floor that can score the ball. And you better get those guys going right now, because you want them playing their best basketball a month from now, not figuring it out when you're going into March.
The FanDuel line at the time of this recording is not up for Tennessee and Kentucky just yet. ESPN Magic Predictor's got Kentucky at a 53.7% chance of victory. What do you think our friends over at the KenPom site will say about this matchup, Grant?
I would say, let me pull it up. I would say Kentucky at home probably by three and a half. Hang on just a second. Because it's funny how the lines are very, very similar. Actually, Kentucky by – no, it says Tennessee by two, 74-72. The KenPom numbers do. And that's usually the way the lines go in Vegas. So I would
that's still surprising to me, though, right? I mean, you know, Kentucky erupt.
Yeah, I guess it goes into how Kentucky's been playing of late and what they've done since they came to Knoxville and right before they came to Knoxville as well. So I guess that goes into it and how Tennessee's been playing as well lately.
Well, what's crazy about that is, I mean, when these two teams played in Knoxville, I mean, we all believe Tennessee was really bad offensively, right? I mean, fair. And it was still a 70.
We didn't believe it. We saw it. We watched.
It was still like Tennessee had, I mean, Kentucky did everything they could to try to give Tennessee the game. I mean, it's not like Kentucky blew them out, ran and hid. I mean, Tennessee had a chance to win that game being really awful offensively, Grant. I mean, so you're sitting there looking at it like, if Tennessee can be a little bit better offensively and not blow four or five defensive assignments early in the game like they did, I mean.
Where's Kentucky health-wise, though? They were down pretty much, what, two starters that game?
Fair point.
Yeah, I think they're in a pretty similar position. I think Lamont Butler has came back, their point guard, the guy that missed the game in Knoxville. And sometimes that obviously changes your team, sometimes for the better, for the worse. If somebody's out, like we saw with Sakai and Igor against Florida, and sometimes you rally and play better. Like, they found a way to get it done in Knoxville without a point guard. If you can go there, like, that, I mean, that's basketball. Tennessee's offense is not what it was against Kentucky, and Tennessee's offense is not what it was against Oklahoma. It's somewhere in between, and how consistently can you be that? And Kentucky's offense is probably not what it was in Knoxville, shooting whatever they shot from three and hitting the number of tough shots they hit, big shots, when Tennessee was trying to come back. And you're right, Hubs. They did not play well in that basketball game, and they had 100 chances to win it in the second half. And I've watched them win that kind of basketball game probably 10, 12 times in the Rick Barnes era, where they just find a way to hit some shots in the second half, and they get the momentum, and they finally get over the hump and make that shot that they have to make to take the lead, and they never give it up again. So, and you're right, like, Tennessee's going to be a top five team in the country. Kentucky's probably going to be top 15-ish. Like, it does kind of make sense to be a road favorite, I guess, in that situation. But whatever it is, it's not going to be a very big line either way, because it should be a pretty close game.
Tennessee and Kentucky, it'll be at 7 o'clock Eastern time. I think that game's on ESPN. Of course, Grant and Rob will have it covered for you right here at VolQuest.com on the General's Quarters. Hey, when we come back, we'll talk latest in the assistant coaching search to fill Mike Eckler's spot, and it's opening week for Tennessee baseball. All that and more right here on the VolQuest podcast. But first, let's get a word from our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions.
Hey, Sterling, man, come on. We got a roof to replace.
Let's go, baby. Let's go.
Hey, Sterling, you ready to go to the top?
Man, I can't believe you guys been doing this for 25 years. Oh, baby.
Now, this is what I call a rooftop party.
We have 25 years experience in roofing and exterior renovations, and we're backed by the best.
Are you ready to get your rooftop party started? Give us a call, 865-524-5888.
As always, big thank you to our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions. That phone number is 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. They have been local and trusted since 1999. All right. Austin Price, Mike Eckler has gone to Nebraska. Tennessee has an opening for a special teams coordinator and outside linebackers coach, Leo's coach. I know you put some names out there on the board, a couple of names, and had a discussion on the board a couple of days ago. What's the latest in terms of elevating someone or finding someone new to fill that final on the field assistant role?
I mean, I think Tennessee's, Josh Heupel's still talking to some people.
Sorry, knowing that there's technically no numbers for on the field anymore. But
yeah, correct. As far as the special team spot, I think Josh Heupel's still looking and talking to different people. He talked to TJ Wiest at the end of the week. Heard it was a good positive, kind of a phone interview. Kind of discussed, what, TJ likes, out of, his special teams, what they're looking for, similarities and differences in the college game and the NFL game, having been with the Ravens for the last several years. Evan Crabtree is a young man that's on staff, you know, who's a younger coach, probably around 30 years old. He's been doing a lot of the special team stuff the last couple of years. He's going to have a role. Now, is it, you know, a bigger role than what he had a year ago? Similar role? I don't know. We'll see what Coach Heupel decides to do. And it won't surprise me if he talks to a couple other names that are maybe from the NFL ranks as well that could be wanting to get back into the college game coaching special teams.
Also, do we think that, I mean, obviously he's also looking for an outside linebackers coach.
Yes.
And there's kind of been an assumption, which is probably not fair, to say that it's Chop. You know, it makes the most sense. But we also know that Josh Heupel is doing his due diligence here. Do you believe those two positions are going to be separate positions, the outside linebackers coach and the special teams coach?
I do. I do not think it'll be the same as it was with Mike Eckler, who kind of had both roles. I think they'll separate them. And Chop does make the most sense. Again, if you know Coach Heupel, he's going to take his time. He talked to David Johnson and a few others when he hired Kelsey Pope. He talked to Jeff Ferris, who's now the Austin Peay head coach, who was at UCLA when he promoted Alec Ablin. Now, he didn't talk to anybody when he promoted Joey Halsley, but I think that was a laydown at that point. I think he wanted to at least do his due diligence with the others. I think he's doing his due diligence here with Coach Chop. Again, Coach Heupel doesn't get in any rush in these instances, so I'm not surprised that this is not just some laydown. This is not just some, you know, like, let's get it done, promote type thing. It wouldn't surprise me at all if you don't hear anything until the first week of spring practice that, you know, he promotes Coach Chop if he elects to promote Coach Chop. I still think he does. I would be shocked if he doesn't, but I do think he's going to take his time in doing so because he wants to talk to other people and you know, just check all the boxes and make sure that they're not overlooking anything.
So one of those positions essentially will be from the support staff, if you will. Like, again, there's no limit on the-field coaches and all that, but there's still nine. So one of these coaches will be, whether it's Chop or you find an outside hire to do special things, one of these coaches will be in the nine. The other one will be technically support staff analyst, correct?
I mean, yes. I think the biggest, easiest way to put it, Chop, the outside linebackers coach will have an office. The special teams person will be in the bullpen with all the other QCs and GAs. But as far as like their roles on the team, it'll be like they're – like if he hired T.J. Weiss, and I don't know if he will or not, but he's at least talked to him. He will be handling special teams much like Rodney Garner coaches defensive line, right? He just won't have an office.
Like, unless they build him one, which
unless
is –
Unless they build him one. That's right.
Well, that's right. I think the best way to say and again, this is a shift in kind of just talking points and a shift in mentality that fans have to understand. And even the media, we have to figure out maybe how to say it better. The only limitation is on the number of people that can be on the road recruiting.
Yep.
I mean, he can have 20, quote, full-time assistants. He just can't put 20 of them on the road recruiting. So – The notion is not that it's an analyst or support staff. It would just be a non-recruiting role, potentially, unless you wanted to take you felt like your special teams coach that you hired was a recruiter and you wanted to take another position coach and make him a non-recruiting coach, which, and go from there. Which
what they've done in the past, what they were doing with Chop here right before Eckler departed.
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, they could take four position coaches and shut them down and leave them at home and take four analysts and put them on the road and make them essentially full-time recruiters, right? AP, I mean, that's in a personnel department. I mean, this is the changing and evolution that's coming to football that I think is going to be pretty interesting to see. Do schools say, hey, young fella, you go recruit and my position coach is going to stay here and it's going to be dealing with them when they come on campus, but you're going to be doing all the home visits. Are you going to be doing the site eval or the school evaluation, you know, in the spring evaluation type deal? I think head coaches are trying to get a grasp on that around the country. Don't you, Austin?
Yeah, I think they are. I think the norm though is just your main nine go out. I think Tennessee's model is more kind of a new look at it. I mean, you know, Chop was out all during January. Eckler was not out at all. And I think had Max still been here, he would have been out here in January and somebody else would have been off the road. You know, I think Josh Heupel's doesn't make a lot of staff changes. And so, like, if he has a somebody like a Max or a Chop that resonate with the recruits, I think he's willing to put them out there on the road, you know, to give them a little bit more responsibility. I think they end up getting a little bit more pay, and they're just a little bit more part of the overall, you know, team of the coaching staff. You
know, and those guys would help in the fall. I mean, I know they're not out, that they're not out every Friday night in the fall and everything, but there are a couple of times they are. Coordinator Josh Heupel's coordinators do not go out on the road, so that's another opportunity for, you know, a Chop or somebody else to go out there and take their place too in the fall.
Yeah, and I wonder too. I mean, if I were a head coach, if my offensive coordinator was not the quarterback's coach, I'm not sure my coordinators would go on the road. I'm not sure I would put them out on the road. I would, you know, I might leave them in the house year round and let them manage their team, you know, manage the team and help manage the team in January because the head coach is going to be out. But if your offensive coordinator is the quarterback's coach, then he has to be on the road because you got to go recruit your quarterback, and the quarterback's coach has got to be hands-on and doing that. So, I don't know. I think it is as we continue to move forward here, kind of how head coaches around the country choose to use that, and do they create, quote, personnel departments, you know, when those guys go out and do all the scouting, sort of like a scouting department does in the NFL. Is that the direction we're going? I think these are all the things that head coaches are, you know, when they're flying on airplanes from school A to school B, or sitting there making notes, like, what's the best way to do all this stuff? And that's just another layer of things that they're looking at.
You are a head coach. You're the head coach of Volquest. And I mean,
I don't go on the road.
You put Matt Ray out on the road. And I mean, like some, he doesn't want anybody to know his location. So, I mean, like, you know, that's kind of where we're at.
That's what I'm going to do, is I'm going to put him in a car and tell him to drive thousands of miles. And we'll talk to you when we see you sometime in June. Enjoy. He loves it. He loves being on the road.
He does. Before we shift to the last topic, any tidbits, any news, any notes from the first couple weeks of workouts, any newcomers that have been impressive, any returners that have been impressive? What have you guys heard so far through the first couple weeks of winter workouts?
You know, for me, and I'm not being flippant here. I mean, as I've gotten older, you know, get off my lawn, right, AP? I get a little less caught up in how enamored somebody is with an off-season workout or an off-season plan. And I know that's probably not what any fan wants to hear, but I've seen enough guys who were really good, like the Kelly Washingtons, right? Created all this buzz, and you're like, oh, wow, okay, whatever. And then it turns out he's an absolute hit. And then there's this guy had the greatest summer. We joke about it being Woody Quinn, but this guy had the greatest summer and known to man, and it gets to fall, it's like non-factor type deal. So we'll see.
Have you guys heard of anybody that just came back and just awful?
Do what?
Have you heard of anybody that came back in the first couple weeks of workouts?
No, I mean, nobody's just awful. I mean, and that's the point, I think, is that nobody's awful. I do think, Austin, that overall the feeling about the newcomers is the same feeling you have most every year, right? This is a really athletic group, and they like the athleticism of this group. How that translates into football when you get to spring practice and next fall, we'll have to see, but from a physical standpoint, I think they feel pretty good about what they've gotten in this class.
Well, no doubt. You know, and again, we've talked about this. They only brought in four in the portal. Two of them were offensive linemen, a receiver, and then a running back. You're going to push these younger guys, whether they're redshirted a year ago, whether they're a true freshman. You're going to push these younger players to develop. You're going to push these younger players into playing time. And we're going to see – you know, we'll throw them in the deep end and see if they can swim. It's basically Tennessee's approach. And, you know, I think it'll be interesting to kind of see how some of these younger players, the less experienced players, respond, because I think they're going to get some real opportunities, especially in certain areas, to thrive, and we'll see if they can do that.
Tennessee baseball begins the season against Hofstra later on Friday, and, of course, Tennessee will be in Houston in the next 2 weeks, but couple of easy non-conference games to kind of warm up for that, and of course before SEC play. But it's a renovated stadium. Got a chance to get over there and check that out on Monday. Position previews coming out every single day this week. The Porch with Xander is going to be joining me first on Thursday. All that and more is coming up as we get close to opening day. But Brent Hubb's national champions, the reigning national champions, are ready to get back in the swing of things, and it's going to be a very new look ball club this year for Tony Vitello.
Well, that's Tennessee baseball, and obviously, Eric, I mean, you've been over there for scrimmages, and you've watched. I mean, they scrimmage every day, you know, and everybody's like, what about a scrimmage? Well, that's how they practice baseball. Say scrimmage, maybe it's situational, but there's a scrimmage every day of some variety, and you've seen them scrimmage a whole bunch. Feels like, and you jump in here and tell me where I'm wrong, feels like this team's going to be able to hit it, which is no surprise. That's what Tony Vitello teams do. And then it's going to start with, let's spend the next 6 weeks trying to figure out exactly where we are in terms of starting rotation, who's our middle relievers, who's our closer, what's the best fit for everybody, and sort of use the non-conference to figure those things out. Fair or not fair?
Very fair. I mean, again, you say it all the time. It's baseball is a marathon. It is not a sprint. And, you know, we have a football mindset as media and as fans. We want it now, now, now. Oh, my gosh, that guy's going to be here. No, like next weekend it might not be that way, or in 2 weeks it might not be that way. Dylan Loy technically started – you know, was a starting pitcher for the starting team in the pizza series on game three. I don't think Dylan Loy is going to be a starter for this baseball team. Will he be opening weekend? We'll see. Probably not, in my opinion. But according to the way they did that in the dress rehearsal, he was. And so I think eventually it'll be a freshman in Tegan Coons, or I think Nate Snead will probably kind of begin that role to the start of the season, because everybody knows who and what Nate Snead's all about. But it's very much tinkering. You know, what's first base look like? The late addition of Alberto Ozuna. He hit the ball really, really hard this past week when he got on the practice field. Still waiting on his final eligibility, but you know, if he's eligible, you know, how long will it take him to take over at first base? I think eventually it'll happen, but you know, I don't think it'll be game one. Where's Levi Clark, who won one of those games with a walk-off three-run home run, and other talented freshmen like Manny Marin Chris Newstrom going to fill in? What's the health and the status of Cannon Peebles and Andrew Fisher, you know, heading into the opener? There's a lot of things that's going to be attributed to tinkering with that lineup through the first couple weeks of the season, but it's always about just trying to figure it out and getting it ready to go for March 14th, which is when Florida rolls into town for the start of Southeastern Conference play.
Yeah, I think a bigger question for me, and Austin, jump in here too. I mean, you certainly talked to Coach Vitello and plenty of people in the program as well. I think what everybody kind of wonders is, what's the mentality of this program and this team after winning it? You know, I mean, there's all of the effort. There's so much drive into getting to Omaha. Then you get there and you got to get back and you got to get back and you got to win first night. And then you find a way and you win the whole thing. You know, it's a total different team. It's the same coaching staff in a lot of ways. I mean, do they have the same drive? Does it feel different? You know, Tony's saying the right things, but I mean, behind the scenes, does it feel like they're where they were a year ago, chasing something where they chased and got it last year? How do you handle that type of success? I'm not talking about going back to back. We know how hard that is to do in any sport, but my point is, Do they have the same mentality and the same approach that they've had the last few years trying to get to the mountaintop?
Well, I mean, it feels like it. There's less known commodities, you know? Like, I mean, you look over there and Kirby Cannell's got a clipboard and he's running in from the bullpen a couple of times throughout the scrimmages. I mean, that's not, you know, he was running into pitch this time last year. But, yeah, Hunter Ensley in center field, you know, Peebles is there and Reese Chapman. But you don't look out there and there's no Simo and there's no Burke and there's no Kavars Tears and some guys that's, you kind of know their moods and you know what they're all about, but still, like, this new look ball club, I mean, they're competitive as all get out. They're talking trash out there. They're frustrated. You know, I mentioned Levi Clark had a walk-off home run for one of the games this weekend. And I mean, there were members of the defense out there that were visibly upset. I mean, they're just competitive. They got the juices flowing. You know, Tony said when we met with him a couple weeks ago, and in speaking with some people behind the scenes, it certainly feels this way, that it was kind of that switch that was flipped when they got back in January. Like, it was fall was about like, okay, new guys, hey, what's up, how we doing, where are we going to fit in here, okay, let's get on the field together. Oh yeah, the national championship, that was okay. I mean, it was still kind of relishing in the national championship glow. And then when you got back in January, it's like, okay, well, we want to prove something. Like, that's great, but half this team is brand new. They weren't even here for last year. Like, we want to prove that we're good, and we can leave our mark on Tennessee baseball legacy and all that. So I don't know if it was, you know, just knowing that it's go time. I don't know if, you know, Hunter Ensley or Cannon Peebles or, you know, Reese Chapman or somebody else kind of had a rah-rah meeting or whatever, but it does feel like that switch was kind of flipped when they returned back in January, and that's what you want. And that, you know, stems to, you know, really good culture in the locker room. Tennessee's got great culture. You know, we won't know exactly how it faces adversity until it hits adversity, and, you know, the Tennessee won't hit a lot of that in the early season, but you hope that they kind of learn some lessons, of course, before SEC play gets here.
Yeah, but Tony didn't have to coach that team last year. I mean, it was right, fill out the lineup card. I mean, they had such great leadership on that team that I think that's a fascinating experience that turned into leadership. I mean, when Blake Burke spoke, there was a great, I mean, everybody, right? He had everybody's attention. Like, I mean, those guys kind of policed themselves. Tony talked about it throughout the season, just kind of like, hey, my job is sort of fill out the lineup card and try not to screw something up, you know, and maybe we'll have to make a decision in game here or there. I mean, this one's going to have to be a little bit different for him, at least early on, because, I mean, I like Hunter Ensley. I think Hunter Ensley's a good player, and I think he's got some leadership skills, but that's a real ascension for him, is it not, Eric, to take over the clubhouse, so to speak, when you talk about the experienced guys on the mound, you know, experienced guys in the field that were leading things in the clubhouse. Fair or not fair?
No, I think that's fair. I mean, again, like you said, he's got leadership qualities. He is a leader. He's a guy people look up to, lead by example. He speaks. He's just not a Drew Beam. You know, he's not a Simo. You know, he's not, you know, Luke Lipsius a couple years ago. I mean, we can go on and on. So, I mean, this is his team, you know, for sure. He decided he wanted to come back, and he's one of the most proven guys on the field, obviously, one of the better guys in the lineup, and he's going to have to step up in that role, and there will be other guys who will ascend in that role, and that's how it works every single year. But yeah, I mean, that's something we'll have to pay attention to for sure, is kind of who takes over the main two to three guys in that clubhouse that will help Hunter Ensley, because again, Blake Burke and Christian Moore are no longer on this team.
You think he looks around and was like, wait, who are all these guys?
A little bit, but then again, he'll look around and be like, ooh, home run. Ooh, bases clearing double. Oh, man, look at that spin rate. I mean, he's like, I'm all right, but now to your point, he probably looks around and says, man, I don't know anybody when I came here. I know Ross Kivett, we're kind of back here together, but there's nobody else here.
Well, I think Tony probably, there's a little bit of that. I mean, like, it's one of those deals where, I mean, you know, Amick was a transfer and was a big part of things, and they had some transfers placed in, but this was a very veteran kind of deep-rooted team, deep-rooted in Tennessee a year ago, right? I mean, Kirby had pitched 12 years or whatever it was at Tennessee, it felt like. And, you know, Beam had been here. And these were guys that had signed out of high school and had developed in there. This feels like it's got a little more influx of free agency. Now, I know there's guys who have been apart, but, I mean, how many transfers are they going to start? Either guys who transferred this year or transferred a year ago and are now the makeup of this team. I mean, it's a little more transient than the last team was, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, just think about it this offseason. Gavin Keelan's going to be a starter, of course. You've got Andrew Fisher that's going to be a starter. You've got Liam Doyle, who's going to be your Friday night starter. Tanner Franklin's going to be a bullpen arm, but he's going to be one of your best bullpen arms. Had a fantastic preseason. Last year, Cannon Peebles was a transfer. You know, once healthy, he's going to be out there. Of course, I think he'll be out there this weekend, but he's a transfer. Nate Snead transferred in. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, to your point, there's a little bit more of an influx in that regard. Because last year you had the Kavaris Tears and Reese Chapman battling it out, and then it was Tears that took over. But both those guys signed out of high school. Ensley, you know, Dylan Dreiling, and, you know, Simo, Burke, Dean Curley. Cal Stark took over at catcher. I mean, I know he was from junior college, but, you know, Xander, Beam, all those guys were – you know, been here a couple of years and signed out high school. So
I mean, they were true culture guys.
Yeah. And so it's going to be a little bit different in this regard this year for sure. But again, that's nature of the beast. That's the way of the world. And you got teams across the country doing the same thing for sure.
Well, they just brought in a guy from North Carolina who may take over first base. He's been here a hot minute. I mean, you know, I mean, that's exactly how this thing goes. Which again is why, Austin, you got to manage your roster, you got to manage your clubhouse, you got to manage your locker room, you know, and try to get everybody going the same way, because I mean, everybody's from a different place, and they're just kind of being thrown in. They're thrown into play right out of the gate, right?
You're right. You're right. All I can think of is the movie The Benchwarmers. I know Hub's never seen that. You ever seen The Benchwarmers?
It's been a long time. I know the movie. I don't remember much of it, but I did watch it when I was young.
They have to win so much and to get the thing. And the one team they go up against brings in this guy who's like, you know, 45 years old. Yeah, and he's like drinking us. They get him drunk in the dugout. I think they've added this guy at the last possible minute here to the season. That's all I can think about. I know it's terrible.
That one's going to be interesting, though, because, again, it was like you go back to culture, you know, talk with some people behind the scenes. It's kind of like, oh, well, I mean, first base is open. It's still open. There's like three or four guys that can theoretically play, get innings there. And you bring in Alberto Azuna, and it's kind of like, well, how's the room? How are the guys? And it's like, oh, well, about how you'd expect. I mean, they're pissed off for 5 minutes, and it's like, okay, let's get back to work. It's like, okay, you good? You good? All right, let's move on. This is what Tennessee baseball is about. And we'll see. Alberto Azuna this weekend, I mean, I think he missed two home runs by a couple of inches, wrote the ball really well, hit a home run in Tuesday's scrimmage. I mean, he was primarily a DH at North Carolina for 3 years. He's going to be in this lineup eventually. And it's not a matter of, I've said it a couple times on the board, it's not a matter of will he be eligible, it's just when. Is it going to happen by opening day? The NCAA is never in a hurry.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But, yeah, that's going to be an interesting thing to pay attention to. Andrew Fisher and Cannon Peebles, I think both will play this weekend. Will Andrew Fisher be at third base and will Cannon Peebles be behind the plate? I don't know. They have not done that the last couple of weeks. And Cannon Peebles hadn't left the lineup, but he's been hitting. Andrew Fisher's played some first base. Is there a scenario where Tennessee begins the season with Andrew Fisher at first base? I do think that's a possibility. And maybe you see Ariel Antigua or Manny Marin at third base. But again, I think eventually Fisher, of course, is your third baseman. Peebles is your catcher. And we'll see if Azuna or Bargo or Levi Clark take over at first base.
Well, we know with Tony, he'll play 45 different lineups over the course of the next month to try to get this. I mean, that he'll be making all kinds of position switches in game and moving everything around. And you guys, I mean, there'll be a pitcher will come in and get one guy out and he'll make another change in the eighth inning and he'll throw three arms and to get three outs in the eighth inning. I mean, that, and again, I'm not knocking it. I mean, that's at some point you take these preseason non-conference games outside of the Houston deal. And a lot of that is basically an inter-squad scrimmage just against somebody else is how you treat it so that you can be at your best once you get to conference play.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, the craziness, it's the who's going to play shortstop, Dean Curley or Gavin Keelan? The answer is both of them. One of them will take it and run, but, like, I would lean Dean Curley. I think he's better at short than he is at second base, but – you know, the craziness this week, both those guys played on the same team because obviously they're both going to be in the starting lineup, but every single inning this weekend, they flip-flopped. One inning, Gavin Keelan would be at shortstop. The next inning, Dean Curley would be. That's so weird and annoying, but that just goes to show you both those guys are going to play. And sidebar on those two guys, Dean Curley switched to the jersey number one and, you know, just Simo vibes in the leadoff spot. He's hitting number one. Gavin Keelan's hitting two, and Tennessee's top of the order is going to be really, really good. But no, to your point, tinkering, messing things around. I mean, that's what baseball is, right? I mean, you want a team of guys that can play all over the place. It's finding what works best for your situation. And I could see a number of different things happening this weekend and next weekend. And, you know, carrying on towards the Florida Gators on the beginning of March. So looking forward to finally getting out there this weekend and sitting in a new spot in the press box. It's not completed, but it's going to be good for this year and a nice little vantage point. And I'm excited to see how that stadium is going to continue to evolve as the season goes along.
Should be fun, no doubt. And then looking forward to seeing what happens and looking forward to start of a journey. And there'll be gnashing of the teeth about what it looks like early, but then we all know that they're going to be entertaining. They're going to be fun and they'll be there in the end. They'll have a chance. And that's the credit to what Tony Vitello and his staff have put together. That's for sure.
I look forward to the first loss where the GQ melts down and Tony and Frank, the game's passed them by. They're fat and happy. They're not hungry anymore.
Dude, it won't be the first loss. It'll be the first time through the order where Tennessee gets like one hit. It's like, oh, they're lazy, terrible at bats.
Running terrible, guys. This team's terrible.
How it is, baby. It's how it is. It's a football mindset. You can't have a football mindset in baseball. You just can't. You can't. But it'll be fun. Tons and tons of coverage coming this week leading up to opening day. We started the preview series yesterday. We'll have one today. We'll have one tomorrow, taking a look at the infield, outfield pitchers. Again, there's a lot of questions that aren't answered yet, and they won't be answered at the end of this weekend, so it's very much a work in progress. But we'll have the Porch with Xander coming up on Thursday, preview of Halter series coming up on Saturday, all that and more coming up this weekend as Tennessee baseball gets going. Tennessee basketball in action tonight from Rupp Arena, Tennessee and Kentucky. Grant and Rob will have you covered there. Everything you need to know about Tennessee football, recruiting, and as Josh Hoppe looks to hire an assistant coach, all that and more from Austin and Brent on the General's Quarters here at VolQuest.com. Appreciate you guys, as always, for joining us, sending those questions for a Thursday Mailbag podcast. And a big thank you to Exterior Home Solutions for being a part of the show, 865-524-5888 or online at ExteriorHomeSolutions.com. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday, everybody.
You've been listening to the VolQuest podcast every week here on VolQuest.